Hey, everybody, Tony Brisky. Obviously, things are very crazy right now, and having something to escape with mentally for our mental health is very, very important. So what I want to do on the weekends, I'm going to grab an EPP episode from our archive of more than 300. We'll pick one a week and put that out there for you as well in its entirety, so you have something else to enjoy and listen to. And if you like those EPP episodes and you want access to all 300 of them, and there's brand new ones every single week, if you want access to all of those, just sign up to be an extra podcast person. If you can, it's only $5 a month. Get all the extra stuff. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories to do just that. These EPP ones that we're going to be dropping for you go way back in our archive, several years back. These are nowhere near the latest episodes, but there's some good ones from many years back. So I'll shut up now. Thank you guys for listening. If you can support the program at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories, that's greatly appreciated. Hope you enjoy the audio, and hopefully this gives you about an hour or so of just thinking about something else.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. EPP 131 of Real Ghost Stories Online today. And on today's episode, a listener becomes conditioned to dislike New Year's Eve because of a haunting. A fun night out turns into a terrifying night in a Vegas hotel. A tragedy turns into a local legend as the area tries to claim more victims, and a little girl begins to have visions and no secrets of her home's past. Those stories and more today on EPP 131 of Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Brisky joining you once again.
Hello.
Hello, and how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing lovely. I'm looking forward to the haunted hotel story.
Yeah.
I read a little piece of it earlier.
So you know which one it is already?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. For the promo I read, and it looks creepy. We're not going to say the name of the hotel on the show, but did they reveal it?
Oh yeah.
Do they? Okay.
They do, but it's also known for being haunted.
It is
too.
Okay.
Yeah, if you Google it, there's quite a bit out there.
Okay, so there's a lot of info. Is it an older one?
No.
No? Okay. Interesting. All right. That's coming up on the show today. We'll jump into our first story here on Real Ghost Stories Online. And it comes into us from Anna. And Anna writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. Early last year, I wrote to you about my nephew acting strangely after one of our family dogs passed away. I mentioned that I'd like to write to you again about my mom. Here are a few of the events that took place over the years of her childhood. My mom, now in her mid-50s, grew up in 19th century house in New York. She's an only child and lived with my grandparents. However, the house was made up of a lower flat and an upper flat. My grandparents were the owners of the house and rented out the lower flat while they and my mom lived in the upper flat. The doors to the house were, of course, very old and required skeleton keys for unlocking them. My grandfather decided to update the front door of the house with a new doorknob and a new doorbell. The door that led to the stairs to the second floor, though, was left with an older and non-functioning doorbell. For as long as my mom could remember, the doorbell to the second floor, the broken one, would ring every New Year's Eve at midnight. As a small child, my mom didn't fully understand the strangeness of this occurrence and never thought to question why the broken doorbell was still able to ring. Why it would ring at the same exact time every year, and how it could ring without anyone standing there to ring it. Finally, when my mom was in third or fourth grade, she became frightened by this repeated, inexplicable thing that no one knew how to deal with besides laughing it off as the ghost saying Happy New Year. Thus, my mom dreaded waiting for midnight on New Year's Eve to strike. Her aunt, uncle, and grandmother would typically visit for New Year's Eve and spend the evening with my mom and grandparents. When midnight came one year, my mom burst into tears at the sound of the doorbell. Her grandmother understandably wanted to comfort her. She decided to go downstairs to the door and say a prayer, bless it, and tell whoever was ringing the doorbell to leave. In the years to follow, the doorbell was never physically changed. But on midnight, every New Year's Eve, it would never ring again. In that same house, my grandparents had put up a, a velvety floral gold flock wallpaper. One day, when my mom was in middle school, they discovered a strange red liquid seeping through one area of the wallpaper. Concerned about possible leaky pipes, they had someone come out and inspect it. The area was inspected, and it was determined that there were no pipes in that area of the wall to leak. After tearing the wallpaper and cutting a big hole in the wall in search of the source of the red liquid, nothing was found. The wall was repaired, and the wallpaper was replaced with more of the same wallpaper. Not long after that, the red liquid began seeping through again. I could never find out what it really was and where it could possibly be coming from, since there were no visible sources of any red liquid in or on the walls. Whenever this bizarre event is brought up among my family members, we refer to it as the bleeding wall. One night during my mom's early teen years, she suddenly awoke to someone grabbing her shoulders and vigorously shaking her. When she opened her eyes to look around, no one was there. This, of course, really scared my mom. She got out of my bed and headed for my grandparents' bedroom to wake them up. She was making her way through the kitchen when she suddenly passed out and crashed into a chair at the kitchen table. My grandparents woke up at the sound, found my mom, and called an ambulance, which then brought my mom straight to the hospital. Soon after that, my mom and grandparents were informed that there were carbon monoxide fumes in the house. My grandparents were told that if none of them hadn't woken up when they did, this poisonous gas would have killed them. My mom doesn't know who or what shook her awake that night, but if whoever or whatever hadn't done so, none of us would be here today. That's all I'll write about my mom for now. I may write back soon with more stories that involve her and the rest of my family. But one more thing. Today I listened to a recent episode of your podcast in which you two talked about premonition dreams. Made me want to mention a dream of mine, which occurred late 2015. I had a dream that my sister-in-law discovered that she was pregnant with twins. She was shocked and nervous and not very thrilled about it. My brother just as surprised, but seemed excited. I texted her the next day to tell her about the dream, and we laughed at how much she said she would prefer not to have that happen. But 2 months after that, my mom received a phone call from my brother telling her the news. My sister-in-law had become pregnant and was shocked and not exactly as excited as my brother clearly was. In September 2016, she gave birth to twins. I have no explanation for this, but I'm not complaining. Sometimes it's nice to get a heads up. Thank you for all you do and keep up the great work. Stay spooky. Anna from Florida.
Okay, because when they said that the wall would like almost look like bleed, and they went and they opened it up, I was thinking, what could possibly cause that? And the only thing I could think of is sometimes bees get up under siding and they nest and they, you know, and you can literally have honey running down your wall.
Sure.
But that wouldn't be red, and they opened it up and it wasn't there. So it's like, what?
You'd have evidence of the bees.
You would.
Back there.
You would.
I mean, it really kind of sounds more like just like an ectoplasm thing, which is real.
Yeah. It's just gross.
And that's sometimes the remnants of something paranormal. Mm-hmm. And that's what is left. And that's very likely what it was, considering they did their due diligence and took a look and didn't just, it's ghosts. And a lot of times you go, oh, it is bees, or it is a pipe, or it is this or that. But they looked, and no evidence of anything. So I'd likely say that's probably along the lines of what it was. And that doorbell, especially an old doorbell. It's not like a technology thing, like a Ring doorbell or whatever computerized doorbell that could have something programmed in it, or a glitch or something.
Sure.
Of a year change, and it does it. Okay, sure. Computer glitch. These were not computerized.
No.
It's all electric pulses. So to have that happen every year, I mean, unless being as old as this sounds like this was, it very likely was not in a smart home.
No.
Where there was any other device that would have been registering dates at all.
Sure.
Any sort of electronic system in the house that could have triggered something. Because my only thought was, you know, well, maybe it is something else in the house if it was more modern of something, and it's some sort of smart home device, and with the year triggering over it, somehow there's a pulse that went out and it triggered a doorbell because of some wire being crossed somewhere. But this is not that.
No, and this takes place a long time ago, relatively, because she said her mom's went in her mid-50s, and this was when she was growing up.
Yeah.
So we're talking, you know, a while ago before anything like that happened or had anything like that was around technology-wise.
I'm curious if anyone else ever lived in the house before these folks, because the only thing I can think of is, you know, someone being this like a residual thing, that it was an every New Year deal and they're celebrating New Year, and whoever was around celebrating in the home prior would sit there on at midnight and ring that doorbell like Happy New Year, ding, you know, just to make noise.
Well, sure.
Around the house.
And it's a very old home.
Yeah. And I could see that being the case where it's like, hey, somebody, and it's a good thing. It's that they were having fun, and mm-hmm. this energy continues to replay itself every year at the same time, and it's triggering what was once done with the doorbell. That's all I can come up with.
Sure.
As somewhat of a residual thing. And there may be very well a couple things going on. There may be some residual things, and there may be some conscious things there. They may not necessarily be the same thing with the entity that woke them up and the ectoplasm and the doorbell. It could be a couple different things all at play at the same time. But Happy New Year. That's
yeah.
That would be creepy. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Jill writes in, hello, Jenny and Tony. My name's Jill, and I'm writing in from Alberta, Canada. I've been an EPP for a couple of years and love hearing stories from others about their experiences with the paranormal. I thought I'd send in mine since it changed my outlook on the paranormal forever. I've been a frequent traveler to Las Vegas for the shows and gambling, and never really thought about hauntings or ghosts until 2016, when a friend and I shared a room that shattered my Las Vegas outlook forever. We booked our hotel based solely on how cool it looked at the Luxor Hotel. It's a one shaped as a pyramid, and many people know. When we arrived, the check-in desk offered to move us to a room in the tower, but we were excited to set on our reservation for a room in the main building so we could use the incline elevator. Everything felt normal as we entered the elevator and headed to the room on a high floor. As we entered the elevator, that fun mood changed. The air in the open hallway seemed cool and silent. My friend grinned and bent over the half wall that looked down upon the atrium at the Luxor. She called me over to look, but I couldn't. I suddenly felt sick to my stomach and refused to walk near that open half of the hallway. I could feel myself clinging to the solid wall where the hotel room doors were. When we entered the room, it was spacious. It was a suite with a whirlpool tub under the window and a living room. It was separated by a wall with an open entrance. The room, however, felt cold and dark. We turned on as many lights as we could to brighten it up, and it seemed to help a bit, but not much. We decided to get ready right away and head to the club. The bathroom was just off the front of from the foot of the beds and was big, almost like an echo-sized room. I placed my makeup bag on the counter along with my friend and turned some music on to loosen us up. As we applied our makeup, a chill came into the room. It was as if something or someone was in there with us, watching us. It gave me a sinking feeling that what we were wearing and talking about wasn't something it liked. I turned to my friend and asked if she felt anything weird in the room. She just turned to me and nodded, but said nothing. We grabbed our purses and headed out. We arrived back in the room around 2:30 a.m. Upon entering the door, a cold breeze blew through my hair. I stopped. My friend, however, walked past me and headed to the thermostat. She chalked up the coldness to the air conditioner and turned the heat up. We headed into the bathroom to remove our makeup, and as soon as we entered, the lights popped out, as only one remained working above the vanity. I decided that my makeup could stay on, and I walked out of the bathroom. My friend stayed getting ready for bed, and as she did, I walked into the living room area and turned on the TV. I couldn't get any channels, so I turned it off and sat the remote on the couch. I climbed into my bed and told my friend on her way out of the bathroom to turn the heat up. She shook her head, said it was as high as it could go. The room suddenly began to feel like a freezer. As we chatted a bit, our eyes closed, and we both dozed off. Not long after that, there was a loud bang. We both quickly sat up in our beds to hear the TV in the other room turn off. "Didn't you turn it off?" my friend asked me. "Yes," I said. "I'll turn it off again," she said. As much as I didn't want to, I knew she wouldn't go turn it off. With a deep breath, I jumped out of my bed and ran to the other room. I turned the TV off and ran back to my bed, throwing the covers over my head. I started to giggle uncomfortably and while trying to justify what had just happened. I told myself this was just a funny thing and not to think too much into it. But just as I thought of that, the TV turned on again. "Go turn it off," my friend yelled at me from under the sheets. but I couldn't. My body was frozen under the sheets. I couldn't move. I could barely answer her. I quietly whispered to her, "The remote is right there. What in the hell?" My friend groaned. She threw the covers off her, grabbing the remote, and turned the TV off. She got back into bed. She yelled out, "Fuck off!" And with that, the TV turned back on. At this point, we were both under our covers in complete panic. Now, I've watched hundreds of horror movies and thought of myself as one who would be tough in a situation as this, but this was terrifying. I didn't move my body an inch and could feel tears streaming down my face. Then, the TV turned off. I could sense someone standing at the end of my bed watching me. It was then followed by pressure at the end of my bed, like someone was sitting down. I knew it was staring at me, and the environment felt suffocating. It wasn't much longer when I woke from under the sheets. The room was warmer now, but a dark feeling remained. I looked over at my friend. It was then that we decided we were leaving. We packed up quickly at 6 a.m. and headed to the front desk. When I told them we wanted to switch rooms immediately, she asked if there was a problem with the room. My friend said it was due to the broken thermostat. "Oh," said the front desk lady. "We can have that fixed right away if you'd like." "It's haunted," I blurted out. She looked up at me, double-checking our room number. "Not a problem. We'll move you now onto another room and on another floor." I got the feeling she knew exactly what I was talking about, but wasn't allowed to engage with it with guests. After that night, I Googled hauntings at this hotel, and safe to say, I will never be staying there again. Thank you for all you do and the amazing stories people tell. I feel better knowing this kind of thing does exist and others believe. Take care.
You know, I can imagine a lot of different things happen in Vegas hotel rooms that you do probably not want to know about.
Sure.
But one thing about the Luxor is they're known for their traveling exhibits that come through.
I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah. I mean, because they've had like Egyptian mummy stuff come through and Titanic stuff come through and who knows what else. So I kind of wonder how much of that is, you know, just fuel for the fire.
How much of it is the hotel and how much of it is it the current exhibit that's traveling through? It's like a home with an object and then you get the object out and some of those exhibits and some of those tours are fairly known to have things going on around them.
Sure.
I remember walking through there and I think it was the first time I actually went to a Titanic exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
It was at that hotel and it was like I mean, I saw another version of it in another city and it was fairly close to the same exhibit. But creepy.
Yeah.
Lots of things, lots of pieces of the ship and stuff that you didn't realize were out from the ocean.
But, you know, there's lots of energy in a hotel anyway, let alone a hotel in Vegas.
That add parts of the Titanic to the mix.
Yeah. So I can understand not wanting, you know, to stay there because of that experience.
I can fully understand that. Thank you for sharing that experience with us here on the show. Makes you wonder about some of the other hotels because, there's another hotel. I don't recall what it is today. But it was the original MGM, the MGM's moved down the strip.
The one that had the fire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Big fire years ago. Lots of people died in the fire. And then it was a big giant concrete building. Fire doesn't necessarily take out the concrete. You still have a structure.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what happened was they gutted it and rebuilt with the same structure, in the areas that were, gutted. And haven't we had stories
Yeah, we have. Yeah. I can't remember what...
It's a long time ago.
Which hotel it is, or what it's called now.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it was that same building.
But yeah.
I can't remember what that one's called now.
Yeah, that was very early in the show. It was a really creepy story, too.
Long time ago, yes.
You got that into the mix as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, good times. 855-853-4802. Is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Ken writes in, telephones are not the same anymore. No longer do we get crossed lines, mysterious strange noises, or have to ask an operator to be connected to our number of choice. Indeed, we mostly carry our telephones with us, easily available for instant use, and usable in many different ways. Overhead telephone lines are also fast disappearing as the conversation to underground cables and fiber optic connections continues at a constant pace. The ugly telegraph poles will not be missed, though, as they stride across the landscape, and especially the one near the medieval village of Lenham, which is locally known as the Killing Pole. The story first appeared in the 1930s when the main road to Dover was put through Kent, UK, from Maidstone to Ashford, and with a line of new pine telegraph poles marking the route and taking the telephone to villages along the way for the first time. The skilled and tough linesmen who made the connections to individual farms and houses often worked alone, traveling the route on a motorcycle with a sidecar to hold their ladder and tools. One such engineer was dispatched late on a winter's afternoon to attend to a badly loose connection close to the Lenham Junction. It was cold and windy, with a threat of snow in the air. After parking his motorcycle safely off the road behind a gap in the hedge, he set up his ladder, put his tool satchel on his shoulder, and climbed the ladder to its full height. Using the fixed step screwed onto the pole itself, he left the ladder and continued to the top. It's not known what happened next, but it's surmised the ladder was blown away from the pole and toppled back over the hedge into the field. The worker was marooned at the top of the pole. Continuing to work on the fault, he connected his test receiver to the line and tried to call the Maidstone Depot for help. The call was received at Maidstone and logged, but it was impossible for the four men to hear the message due to the poor quality of the line and the howling wind. It seems that the engineer may have tried to hail a passing vehicle to alert the driver to his situation, and in doing so slipped from the icy steps and fell. Caught up in the electric cables by the strap of his satchel, which squeezed tight around his neck, that night the snow fell hard and deep. The road became impassable to cars and buses, and the hanging linesman slowly froze to death. Icicles formed on his body, and he was slowly overcome by the snow until his snow-shrouded body resembled an icy sack hanging from the post, turning grotesque in the breeze. The next morning, the body was reported to Lenham Post Office by a man who said he had passed the night after the spot, after being caught in the snow and feeling too cold to carry on. At first light, he had trudged his way through the deep snow to the village after seeing the sign post on the junction pointing to Lenham. Although cold and soaking wet from the melting snow, he did not stay to accompany anyone back to the scene of the tragedy and was never seen again, apparently disappearing into the snowscape. As soon as was possible, the local police constable, accompanied by several members of the village fire brigade, made their way to the pole to cut the gruesome body down. It was kept overnight at the Lenham mortuary. As soon as was possible, transported to Maidstone. It's said that even today, on dark, freezy, snowy evenings, a faint glow can be seen slowly climbing the post, where it stops for a while at the top until suddenly plunging downward to a sharp stop and wavering and turning slowly with the wind. Weird noises can also be heard from the wires above the seemingly whisper, the word, "I am dying, dying," in a wavering high tone as the wind whistles through. This is certainly not a place to stop or break down. A traveler in the 1980s had his car suddenly stall at the very spot as he passed the pole, and he could not get it started, whatever he did. It was snowing at the time, and his only recourse was to stay inside and sleep in the car. He did not record in detail what he experienced at night, but the effect on him was so severe that he vowed never to drive the road again, either at night or in daylight. He almost froze to death himself that night, being found by a patrolman the next morning who warmed him in the police van before being driven to Lenham for a hot drink, food, and warm clothes. As the car had no fault that could be traced as being mechanical, the car was assumed to have suffered a sudden complete electrical failure of some kind, but which was completely untraceable by the skilled patrolman. Since those days, others have had similar breakdowns at the same spot, and more frightening, several serious accidents have actually taken place there. Over the years, many people have reported a misty figure in foggy winter conditions who seems to direct them off the road towards the pole, as though willing them to crash at the spot. It's now surmised that the man who reported to the post office was actually the shade of the dead man, eager to get help to cut himself down and alert his family to his death. The question local people ask is, does the evil energy surrounding this tragic night still linger within the Whistling Wires? Trying to bring more unhappiness to this evil spot, to serve its lust for death. And who will be next?
I think it's weird when something like that happens, and then it seems like the ghost or something portraying itself as the ghost of the person that died tries then to get other people to die too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what's the deal? Is it misery loves company, or is it just something trying to show up as that, but not really that?
Or did this thing cause the initial death? Mm-hmm. Was this there before him?
And it's hard to know because it sounds just like an accident. It doesn't sound mm-hmm. like it's, I mean, it sounds like it's definitely something that would happen. It's not a believe it or not kind of thing.
You're right. I mean, it does very much sound like an accident. I'm just wondering how much something like that used that to, like we were talking about this the other day. How many times is there a murder by a ghost, but it just appears to be an accident
sure.
of some sort? So I'm wondering if that's part of it, because it sounds like this was just a normal linesman doing his thing. So why would he come back and do anything? Which probably is not that.
Yeah.
It's probably something else in that form.
But, you know, it's kind of, it's confusing because I'm sure people that see the glow going up the pole and seemingly fall and then hang there,
mm-hmm.
you know, that seems very much like a residual thing. So you would just assume that all the activity is that person.
You would.
But I think there's a couple things going on there.
I agree. Good story. Thank you for sharing that with us. Amber writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. My name is Amber. I'm from Texas. I've written in and called in before. You may recall an EPP story I wrote in pertaining to a different haunting in each room. I've also called in telling my experience as a hospice employee who had a patient pass during a bed bath. My most recent call had been experiences at a mental health hospital where I had recently started working. Now that you may be able to place the person with the stories, I'll tell you one of my experiences as a child. This may or may not be my very first ghost story, but it is certainly the earliest one I can recall from when I was a young child. The reason I say this is because I've seen people as real as you and I are, and that were not visible to others. If I saw them as real people that early in life, I would have not been able to decipher the difference. I was about 4 years of age when my stepdad took a job as a peanut farmer's helper. We lived in town, but as time went on, my dad's employer offered my dad a rental home that was in the country and closer to the fields that he had worked in. My dad accepted, and we moved in quickly. The house was old. The exact age is not known, but obviously older than 50 years or so. The layout of the house was odd. The home itself was large, but built to be a one-bedroom, one-bath kitchen, huge open dining room, and two living rooms. Maybe one living room and one office space. Like I said, the layout was strange. The home sat on the main road. Neighbors were not close. In the backyard, there were acres of tall stalks of corn. There also was a shop-like garage about 20 yards in the back. My parents used the back door as the only exit and entrance to the house because the front door is where they had made my room. The room or living room or the office area or whatever was my room. They slid a large dresser in the front of the door and said that was my room. They took the only bedroom, which was located at the rear of the house. I was separated from my parents by a long hallway and dining room. I don't remember a whole lot of living in this home, but I do remember my experiences with whatever else was residing there with us. My introduction to the paranormal started at first as strong feelings. Even then, as a child, I knew. Call it intuition, call it whatever you like, but I will not understand what exactly was happening to me until I was much older. I never liked being in that house and most definitely refused to play in my room based purely on intense feelings of suffocating, malicious hatred that filled the room. If it wasn't in the room with me, I knew it was peering at me around the corner. Made me feel so uncomfortable and anxious. That as a natural reaction, it simulated the fight or flight response. At that age, it was always flight. I'd run to my mother and stick to her. And whatever she was doing, if the weather was willing, my mother allowed me to play outside, or I would beg her to death to allow me anything to be rid of the house. I always put up a fight when it was time for bed. It's not easy being 4 years old and attempting to tell your parents that you can't sleep in your room because of nothing. I believe I could have easily been able to generate a mental mechanism that would have helped me cope with the evil feelings over time, but it would have stayed in that realm. The feelings graduated to noises, talking, and whispering. My mom was cooking in the kitchen one day. She absolutely forbids me to be in the kitchen while she was cooking, not only because I was highly irritating and because of being in the way, but for safety as well. So I stayed in the next room, which happened to be the large dining room. The hallway that connects my room straight back is also connected with the dining room. I'm playing near the door frame that connects the kitchen and dining room, attempting to keep an eye's view of my mother and her into mine. In this position, I'm also able to see down the hall into my room. I'm playing with my dolls, using my own voice to make them talk and have imaginary conversations. I'd say something from my doll in a high, squeaky voice and then respond to her, being myself in my own voice. A few minutes into this dialogue with my doll, I would ask my doll a question. As I was about to change my voice to respond to the question for my doll, another voice responds in this angry, deep, obviously annoyed, raspy voice and barks, "Why didn't you shut the fuck up?" I immediately scoot my body in the kitchen and yell out, "Mommy," and begin to cry uncontrollably. As soon as my mom was able to call me, I tell her of a voice and what they said. My mom told me that I was saying a bad word, not to repeat it. After consoling, as she was, she didn't have an excuse for what I heard. That evening, I gave my parents hell about going to sleep in my room. My stepdad did not have the patience for such nonsense behavior and never allowed me to sleep with him. I was always left on my own in my room in the dark. No nightlight, but the glare of the moon when possible. I cried myself to sleep on most nights, only to be awoken by a cracking sound. My bedroom door closing, my parents put a door stop to keep it open. I know, I made sure of it. As soon as the latch on the door clicked, signifying that it was completely closed, I heard the whispers. They loved closing the door when my back was turned to it. As a matter of fact, I don't believe they ever closed the door to my room when I was facing the door. Their whispers were hardly audible, but I knew they were talking about me, calling me the little blonde bitch and other harsh names. Too afraid to move or call out, I would ever so slowly and softly, to not show any detection of movement, I gently slide my hands up to my ears and use my fingers to plug them and would eventually fall asleep. Even then, with the disturbing feelings, the noises and talking, I believe I could have passed it all off as part of my daily routine and could have simply gotten used to it all. But it all progressed. No, they could not have stopped there. They saw that I was becoming too comfortable again. One night I was awoken by the sound of hard, heavy footsteps in the hall. This time, my door was open and I was facing it. I initially thought it was the wee hours of the morning, which it would not be uncommon for my stepdad to be up and getting ready for work, but I quickly dismissed it because something was missing. No lights or other distinguishable noises. My stepdad would have at least had one light on and I would be able to hear him and my mother talking or watching the news. As soon as I was capable of working out the what's wrong with this picture in my childish head, there it was. My bedroom door frame was about 7 feet tall. This thing, this human-shaped mass of black, nothing filled it top to bottom. The figure was of a slender man, though it had no features. This I knew. I closed and opened my eyes multiple times, squeezing them to determine it wasn't a trick of the eye. After it did not disappear, as I had hoped, I was stunned and couldn't make up my mind of what it is that I should do. Should I call out? No way. Should I run for it? No, he's blocking me. With nowhere to turn or nowhere to hide, all I could do was stare at it, being perfectly still and silent. I did not dare budge or make a sound. There was a moment that had passed where I really needed to go to the bathroom, but I did not dare. If I lived through this, I'd gladly take the consequences of pissing in my bed. There's no telling how long I laid there without movement, but it began to become extremely painful. Yet I laid there in my urine and aching to move. At some point, I must have passed out. I woke the next morning still wet, the sun rising and birds chirping, my mother vacuuming in the background. I showed her that I wet myself and took the consequences. I tried to explain to her what I had witnessed, and she told me I was dreaming in a hush. She was highly frustrated that I wet myself and the bed. Sometimes my parents heard noises throughout the house and assumed it was me up at night. It would get me in trouble when I wasn't well rested. Some time had passed. The figure appeared to me a few times more when I was in my bed. I made the decision that this entity did not know if I were asleep or not, so I would usually turn my body away from him and stick my fingers in my ears and ignore the voices completely. I don't know what I would have done if they would have touched me, but they didn't. Strangely enough, something new started happening. I started to have visions. My parents had allowed me to have a puppy. He was not allowed to be in the house with us. My dad pinned him up in the garage. I was out there attending to him, about to release him to play with me. The next thing I remember, I saw a movie-like memory that wasn't mine. I saw a boy who was sad because his family was moving out of the house and had to leave behind a toy chest. The toy chest is rather large. That's why he had to leave it behind. They stuck it in the corner of the garage and left. I watched them drive away. The next thing I know, I'm sitting Indian style in front of my dog's cage and him anxiously trying to get my attention. There are many things in this garage that did not belong to my parents, but I had new information and I went to the corner of the garage where I saw the toy box in my vision. And sure enough, a large handmade wooden toy box was indeed there. I attempted to open it up, but there was heavy objects on top. Later, when my stepdad came home, I waited for him to rest and have a dinner. He always kept a garden, so when he went out to tend to it, I took the opportunity to show him the toy box. He opened it up, and there were many old toys in it. I was excited beyond belief at my newfound treasure. Unfortunately, my mom intervened, and I was only allowed to pick one, since I had many toys already. I chose a stuffed squirrel, of all things, and my mom took it to wash it. I can recall another of my visions, in the same format as before, as if I were watching a movie. I saw that the house I lived in was a small church. That would explain the strange floor plan and the massive dining room space. My parents had no clue what I was talking about when I started calling our house the church house. When my sister was born, I heard a woman tell me to go check on my sister. Thought it was my mom, so I did. When I looked in her crib, I noticed her face was covered. I pulled the blankets completely off of her entire body. When I did, I saw that there was a huge brown spider, larger than an adult hand, in her crib. I ran to get my mom. She was able to get her out, but the spider was no longer there. My mom asked me what I was doing in there, and I told her that she told me to go check on her. She was baffled. I eventually began kindergarten, and my parents quickly found out that it was no longer convenient to live so far from town or my school. They eventually moved back into town during that year. I was not sorry to leave. As an adult, since I've been back to the house, now abandoned and weathered, I let myself in, and I'm glad I did. As I showed myself room to room, I left my room for last. I hesitated, but I opened the door. There was a dog and her pups trapped in the closet. Something or someone had closed her in there, and she looked as if she were starving. Her ribs were severed, severely showing. I moved them to the garage, where she wouldn't be trapped again, and fed her.
It's like there's something that just wants to wreak havoc with children and animals. Mm-hmm. And then there's also something that's kind of trying to be protective as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then that, you know, and then to develop the ability to have visions in the midst of all that. I don't know what to make of all that.
It's hard to know if it's the house, if it's the person, if it's a combination of the two, if it's something passing through.
Yeah, and it's weird that all this is going on in a building that, you know, was a church at one time. It's just, I don't know.
I wonder with the dog thing at the end, if that was, you know, the house that did this, there was some awful human that did that, and the house somehow called her back to save the helpful.
Could be.
Spirit trying to call her back to save. Very difficult to know, but one hell of a house.
Yeah.
Wonder why it ended up being abandoned. That's other question. Maybe someone else with a whole slew of stories.
It's kind of like if you are offered a house for free, it's just like beware.
Yeah.
So often we get that.
Yeah. Exactly. Thanks for all the stories today. Thank you guys for being EPPs. We greatly appreciate it. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for being EPPs of Real Ghost Stories Online.